Hi, folks. This is CBD of the Cut Jib Newsletter podcasterating system. I'm here today in overcast New Jersey, although it is cold, which makes me very, very happy. I'm here with JJ Sefton, who's in the wilds of Wisconsin, freezing his ass off, and a lovely and unexpected guest. Buck Throckmorton is here with us. We've been trying to get him on for a while, but he's been dodging us. So we pinned him down, and he is slumming with us for the next hour or so. JJ, how are you doing?
Freezing my the Nancy Pelosi Botox witch's boob off. It is really cold here in Wisconsin, but it's sunny, so that's not too bad. But and it's to be expected. It is, after all, the weather. You know, I mean, it happens several times a year, from what I understand. But of course, the world is coming to an end. And Buck Throckmorton, great to have you, my friend, co-blogger, colleague, and author and pundit extraordinaire, who's a jack of all trades on many subjects. But his specialty is, of course, the whole climate alarmist nonsense and the electric vehicle boondoggles that are associated with that. So I think I just veered into perhaps our first topic. So welcome, Buck.
Hey, well, guys, it is great to be with you all again. You are the best, and I'm honored to join your podcast. And since we're giving weather reports, you'll be glad to know we did get a dusting of snow this morning at my Tennessee mountain home. So chilly here, too.
Indeed. So, as we were saying, there are a lot of things going on, and we're going to, I guess we'll kick it off with, as I was saying, with the environmental nonsense. First up, in case anybody missed it, which you may have, is that there is this 30th annual climate conference of the U sponsored by the UN happening somewhere, I think in Brazil, in the Brazilian rainforest, which is allegedly disappearing, and we're all going to die. But, and world leaders in the main have been, of course, Donald Trump is not going to that nonsense, but in the main have decided to avoid it and stay away. I guess there's not enough underage hookers and cocaine to go around. So, you know, that leaves Maisie Hirono's child whoremongering mother to be working double shifts to try
Oh,
to
gosh.
procure for the people that are there. But anyway, this climate conference is going on, and I just wanted to underscore, without my ridiculous attempts at humor, the fact that much of the world is now backing away from the whole global warming alarmism, and not least of which is, of all people, who was one of the biggest purveyors of it, is Bill Gates, and he's backed away from it even publicly.
Yeah, that's a fascinating development, and I'm trying to muster the strength to applaud and praise him when I've been so angry about the damage that the term I like to use, philanthropaths, some
I love that word.
a portmanteau of
that's awesome
philanthropists and psychopaths that are trying to use their great wealth to overhaul all of society into some kind of strange vision that's really akin to Bond villains. And the fact that he's defected from being a Bond villain, trying to change the climate and trying to make us eat bugs and trying to reorganize society in a manner that Klaus Schwab would approve of, is a good thing. So, yay, thank you, Bill. That said, it's also reality has slapped him in the face like a cold fish, and all his high-tech buddies, I think, are realizing now that AI and all this stuff they've talked about cannot be powered by windmills and solar panels and unicorn emissions. It takes a ton of electricity. And so suddenly it's necessary for them to really abandon what is really a false flag effort to remake society in the name of the environment. Now, to remake it, you know, to continue their agenda of whatever will be in tech and to pursue the AI, they need abundant electricity. So, yay, thank you, Bill. I'm glad you came around.
You know, it's not just Gates realizing it. It's the motor companies that that are realizing that the market governs what they build, and that they cannot push from the top down ridiculous boondoggle cars and trucks on the American people and hopefully the rest of the world. We have more economic freedom in the United States than in many countries. But I think I saw Ford Motor Company is considering dumping the their E150, I think it's called, that
F-150.
ridiculous idea that they could run a pickup truck that's supposed to haul hundreds or thousands of pounds of stuff around the country, powering it with electricity. It's moronic, and it's biting them in the ass, and they're losing billions and billions of dollars a year on these projects. And it's fascinating. And Buck has written about this on Ace of Spades, on and at the Blaze and other places. And well, I'll let him speak about this because he's great at it.
The whole thing was the electric vehicle transition was a really disturbing assault on liberty, is really what it was. And fortunately, God bless the Japanese auto manufacturers, they alone did not get totally seduced by an all-EV future. But the European manufacturers, they were coerced into it. There was a hard hammer on them from European governments to go all electric. Domestically in the United States, Ford and GM did not have to. Unfortunately, they had woke leadership that decided to. Mary Barra at GM and then Jim Farley at Ford, the CEOs, made a huge and ridiculous commitment to EVs, and especially getting into the Obama and Biden era, well, it actually goes back earlier, the $7,500 federal tax incentive. But there was no way that this could be profitable for auto manufacturers without massive government assistance, subsidization, and also the government outlawing traditional internal combustion gas transportation, which is the engine of freedom. And they were counting on the government making it illegal to drive an ICE car, internal combustion engine is ICE, and mandating electric vehicles. And fortunately, voters, we resisted that through at the ballot box by putting Trump in power. But more importantly, consumers rejected it at the auto dealerships and had had the executives of Ford and GM just talk to their dealers, just talk to their customers, they would have known those products could not work. They could have lobbied against the Biden administration. Instead, they wanted to be good globalists and they endorsed it. And so Ford and GM are really dealing with a monumentally expensive problem trying to unwind the damage they've done to themselves.
You know, you made a very, very good point, and that is that the internal combustion engine has promoted liberty in the United States. And that sounds ridiculous on the face of it, but the reality is a little bit different. We are not beholden to government to move around. And mobility is one of the basic freedoms, I believe. And the internal combustion engine has provided that freedom to Americans for 100 years. And the government was very, very carefully trying to eliminate that little bit of freedom. Is it as important as the First and Second Amendment? You could argue, yes, it is. That freedom of association, freedom of movement is a vital thing to a vibrant constitutional republic.
It allows you to live your life as you want to live it, not as some bureaucrat or tyrant or apparatchik wants you or orders you to live it. Freedom of movement is a very big deal. Now, to equate it with the First and Second Amendments, as you know, I mean, I wouldn't say it's apples and oranges, but they're all part of the same, speech and the right to defend yourself and the right to move around and to conduct business. And to conduct your business your way is a hallmark of freedom. And now look at what's happening in California with the ridiculous policies of Brill Cream Newsom with in shutting down, those environmental edicts are biting him in the ass and shutting down oil refineries and all of a sudden gasoline. There are gas lines now in California again. Thank you, Mr. Newsom, who is likely, or the racial politics and other politics aside, he is the likely presidential candidate for the Democrats in 2028, unless some, no pun intended, dark horse comes to the fore. But and he's an absolute disaster. And not only that, is his beyond environmental nonsense, is his literally being an insurrectionist in opposing the federal government's policies in securing the safety of the citizenry with the National Guard and in rounding up illegal aliens. So he's a walking disaster. Dear
Yes,
God.
and it's the best thing possible for the American electorate for Newsom to be the candidate in 2028. I'm firmly convinced that it will be one of the few ways that the Republicans can almost guarantee a win in 2028.
Yeah.
But
If
you
they
know, it
offer
was
us up another California politician as the Democrat
yes.
candidate, thank you.
You know, I noticed in one of my news feeds that the Permian Basin is now producing more than a million, equivalent to a more than a million barrels of oil a day. And that is domestically produced energy that is essentially pumping funds into our economy. Because when you think about it, we're
That's
not
right.
buying anything. Yeah, you know, we're paying for labor and we're paying for the significant infrastructure to extract and to process oil. But the raw material itself is free. And if it doesn't have to be shipped to the United States, then that is a very, very good thing. And the idea that we are going to move to this pie in the sky, all electric economy, where the electricity is generated intermittently, maybe during the day when it's windy, is absolutely insane. It's absolutely insane. And the idea that our elites have entertained that notion fascinates me because it is proof positive that our elites are elite in only one way, and they certainly aren't elite intellectuals because it simply makes no sense. You know, a vibrant mix of energy technology is the way to go. I think we should probably build a hell of a lot more nuclear technology. But you know, we have oil, we have coal, we have hydro, we have thermal, we have wind a little bit, I guess, maybe, I don't know. Solar, I think is junk. I think it's a boondoggle. I think it takes up far too much land to be an efficient way of generating power. But it's the mix that is important. And
And to your point
go
on
ahead.
nuclear power, I thought I saw somewhere that the Trump administration has now approved a massive ramping up of nuclear plant production, and
Yep.
that's an amazingly good thing.
Yeah, it's interesting also that I keep a close eye on the TVA, the huge federal utility here, and the Trump administration did just green light a new modular nuclear reactor, which is the which should be the next generation of small nuclear reactors, but you'd have a lot more of them instead of just these massive undertakings that take 15 years to complete, and for whatever reason, budget and cost things never go right. And they've, after Three Mile Island, it's pretty much ceased any new nuclear production. That the next wave may be a whole bunch of much smaller modular. But part of me, it still boggles my mind that back in the 50s, 60s, into the early 70s, this country aggressively built nuclear plants and did it well. And Westinghouse had a model and they've been great. And we're now trying to relearn how to do nuclear energy. It's almost like we can't go to the moon anymore. We can't build nuclear energy plants anymore. It's something really bizarre to ponder.
Well, if people, more people like Elon Musk, will be going to the moon privately, and more people like him may be building nuclear plants, So good. Let it let 1,000 1,000 new Henry Fords and Nikola Teslas, and not Tesla automobiles, but you know what I mean. Let them bloom. Let the next genius crop of geniuses, hopefully not getting degrees in lesbian Inca poetry and real worthwhile degrees in STEM, come forward and create the next great wave of technology.
Yeah. And to bring it the circle back to where we were before is that this is a good thing that the tech industry is very much embracing nuclear energy now. They know they need great gobs of electricity, and so that's really going to help bring a renaissance of nuclear energy, and that's exciting. Hey, one thing I wanted to touch on again when we were talking about electric vehicles, I think in time we're going to look back on 2025, even summer of 2025, as being such an amazing turning point to kill so much of the whole net zero green EV nonsense, at least in this country, but killing it here will ripple out throughout the world. And that this past summer, Lee Zeldin, the EPA administrator, moved forward to reverse the endangerment clause, which that was the whole preposterous thing that's the Supreme Court allowed, and then the Obama administration implemented, that said that carbon dioxide is causing global warming, and therefore anything that produces carbon dioxide can be regulated by the federal government because it's destroying the planet. And that was the endangerment finding. And so Lee Zeldin has just come along and said, nah, that's over. And so,
Good. He's good.
yeah, oh,
Yeah.
it's
And
amazing.
very quiet, by the way.
Very quiet. And so, what he and so many of these Trump appointees are doing, and then also that big, beautiful bill. I know there were a lot of purists that were really upset that this was not the perfect, pure, conservatarian, libertarian, small government bill. But you know what it did? It actually rolled back so much of big government, because normally these omnibus bills expanded. That bill just ripped away most of the green bureaucracy. That's what got rid of all the EV mandates, the $7,500 tax credit, and it even got rid of the incentives that propped up used EVs. It got rid of pretty much all the EPA regulations, and liberty was restored to such a great degree against the net zero agenda in the summer of 2025 with Zeldin and also the transportation secretary, what's his name, Duffy, some of his regulations, the big beautiful bill. So we really have turned the corner on so many things here. That's, it's funny. I look back and think, in 2016, I was a never Trumper, to great shame. There's never been, but my core issues, there's never been anyone more conservative advancing my agenda, which is liberty against the Church of Climate, than Donald Trump has done.
Yep,
Yeah,
he has been
I don't think
he
anybody
has been
has.
outstanding.
Yeah. In fact, the reality is there hasn't been anybody who has rolled anything back. Even
Correct.
Reagan did not roll back the EPA, which was one of Richard Nixon's catastrophes.
Correct.
Yeah. I think wow. That's a very good point.
And it's in a weird way, I'm very glad that the Democrats stole the governorship for Kathy Hochul, however many years ago it was in 2020, and that Lee Zeldin wound up as he would have been a great governor of New York State, but how effective would a Republican governor have been with the corrupt Democrats running the city and the state? But still, God bless him. He's doing wonderful work at the EPA. And yes, carbon dioxide, my friends, is life itself. Carbon is life. It is necessary for life. Now, does that mean, we need to dump our trash in the streets, dump raw sewage everywhere? All this kind of stuff, dump dioxins every. No, of course not. But we need to be responsible in having a clean environment.
See,
But that said, these things,
that's the vital point. It's not a binary decision. We can have growth, we can have technology, we can have abundant energy that's reasonably priced, and we can have a clean environment. And that's the issue. These watermelons, green on the outside, red on the inside, don't want a clean environment. They don't actually give a shit whether the environment is clean. And you can look at Russia and China as perfect examples of that. Their environments are miserable places.
And
They are
India, yep.
filthy, filthy countries. But we have done through capitalism or market economies, however, whatever you want to call them, what we have done is created abundant and reasonably priced energy and a clean environment. And the three of us are of an age that we remember when America was a dirty place, when there was garbage on the side of the roads, when there was that purple yellow haze in the skies most of the day, and we fixed it. We as a people fixed it, and we'll never go back to that. But
You know,
what we
for those who don't understand that, I would say, I mean, it's, I mean, depending upon your television set, go watch a rerun of the TV show All in the Family. And specifically, don't watch the entire show, but just the opening and closing credits. And the opening and closing credits are aerial shots of New York City. And you can see, even on a crummy black and white film, you can see the haze in the air that we were breathing in as kids. And that was in many parts of the country, with the exception of farmland. And even then, it was blowing over everywhere. And we cleaned it up. We definitely cleaned it up. And yes, certain environmental regulations and, you know, certain gas formulations, the lead, the whatever, and people being responsible and tuning up their engines and all of these things, as individuals even, we did it. We certainly did it. And it was a good thing that the auto manufacturers listened to that. And they gave us powerful, the Hemi engines, if you remember those, the V8s. And yet, you know, we still, you know, we lived, we lived, we did our best in the crying Indian, Ironizer Cody, and you know, we didn't dump trash in the streets, and we didn't, which in India or anywhere in the third world, people are throwing crap into the streets, and it's unbelievable. If you've ever traveled extensively in third world countries, I mean, in other places, it's open sewers. And here in America, we are, relatively speaking, we are clean, and we know not to shit where we eat, and even industry now knows not to do those things. And Lord knows we won't have any more love canals and all these things. And you know, but the engine of free enterprise is what we need.
And that engine is driven by abundant, reasonably priced energy. There's no way around it.
Yes,
And also, JJ,
absolutely.
what other point, getting back to what you said about CO2, is it's life, it's plant food, and the epic dishonesty that the left has done in their assault on freedom by taking the victories in the campaigns to clean up this country from. By likening CO2 to nitrous oxide or other things and calling CO2 pollution, and therefore that's regulating life. But CO2 is not pollution. It's kind of like if you said that, hey, when I cook, there's food scraps, which is garbage. Therefore, food is garbage. No, CO2 is not pollution. It's plant food. And so the dishonesty of trying to
Yeah.
call CO2, you don't know where I'm going.
Yeah,
No,
it is.
but you're
Yeah.
absolutely right. It is
fundamentally dishonest, but because it has never been about the environment. It is
Correct.
about social control. That's
Correct.
all it is. And the environment is simply a tool, just as the left sees Islam as a tool. Now, that's going to bite them in the ass sooner rather than later. But they don't care about the environment. They don't care about the family. They don't care about people. They care about control.
You know how I
And
know we don't they don't care about the environment, like we've all believed, is we're talking about War of a Certain Age. We remember Save the Whales. We remember crying when Jacques Cousteau showed a beached whale or a beached porpoise. And now the environmentalists are rallying around. We must kill as many whales as possible to do wind energy. It was all a hoax. It was always about social control that. We care more about the whales than the environmentalists do, for crying out loud.
Look at,
The
you know, you go back to Lee Zeldin and the EPA. Look at regulations. There was the this remember this a number of years back, maybe it was under Obama, my God, the Waters of America Act, or Waters of the United States, where the government was going to literally declare a puddle in your backyard as a navigable waterway that can be regulated by the government. And if you don't do any, if you tick them off somehow, they could literally seize your property. They were seizing. What they want to do is drive businesses out of business, drive farms out of business, put people out of work, make them do whatever. They don't care what you do, so long as they could seize your assets, seize your property, seize your land, and do with it what they want. That is the ultimate goal. If they make you know, add so many pollution control devices to your machinery, to your to whatever, to your cost of doing business, they drive you out of business. And in so doing, they take your freedom away. And that is the ultimate goal. They don't care. I mean, yeah, they're all bitching and moaning about, yeah, jobs, we're losing jobs, we're losing jobs. You know, let me tell you something, that the government is the greatest destroyer of jobs because of the regulatory state. That is without a doubt. And it's just, I remember hearing that story about that rancher who they whatever, he had a cattle, whatever, feeding area, and they literally forced him to almost spend his entire net worth in order to fill it in because it didn't meet some sort of requirement. That's what we're up against, and hopefully that will go the way of the dodo, please God.
What's fascinating about that is that the corporatism inherent in ultra regulation is so obvious to me. And, you know, it wasn't, what, maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago, people were fighting against corporatism, but now they are embracing it. So, you know, that's just one more little bit of hypocrisy on the part of the left.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I'm surprised.
Yeah, no, I've written about that at the pipeline, how the major oil companies have actually allied with the environmentalists to crush the independents.
Yes.
That it's so disheartening to someone like me that, you know, for many decades I was capitalism equals corporations. And if you're anti-corporation, you're a socialist. And I've come to realize that, you know, corporations exist within a capitalist system, but corporations and their leaders aren't necessarily advocating for capitalism. They're advocating for what is best for them at that exact moment. I'd like to say they're advocating what's best for their stockholders. Oftentimes it's what's best for that mercenary in the corner office at that exact moment. But my defense of corporations as part of capitalism does not mean that the executives and corporations are going to embrace a defense of free markets. They want too many bad examples. They want to use the power of government and their friendship with regulators to crush their competition.
By the way, that is known as fascism, my friends. Hello, Antifa. Are you anti-fascist? Then stop rallying for government to be in bed with your favorite corporation to get rid of the little guy. That is fascism right there.
And this takes us right back to Ford and GM. That's exactly what they did. They don't care much. Well, actually, you know, something, they really are true believers. I withdraw that comment. I think Buck has written enough about the fact that that both Ford and GM are true believers in the pie in the sky nirvana that is EV.
Yeah, no, it's still puzzling. GM's CEO Mary Barra has still not renounced her all electric commitment, and at this point, who is she answering to? Who is she obedient to? It's certainly not GM's customers who have emphatically rejected EVs. It is certainly not the dealers who can't sell EVs. It's certainly not the current administration. Now, I know that she was slavishly obedient to the Biden administration. She was effectively like an order-taking clerk for them, let's be honest. But at this point, with the Trump administration in power, who is she loyal to? Is it the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab? It just makes no sense that she will not back off this EV commitment. And I'm very familiar with back in, you know, over at Ford, Bill Ford, this goes back 20 decades. Maybe I shouldn't, but sometimes refer to him as Little Billy Ford when he worked his way into the CEO office. From the executives I know there, it was really like dealing with a child that, you know, he'd be in his quarter office. They'd come pat him on the head. You're doing a great job, Billy. Here's an electric toy to play with, while they went out and ran the company. And then he managed to get Jim Farley in there to implement his vision that would make all his Ivy League buddies and all his WF buddies happy and make Ford all electric. And Farley,
what was the phrase you used? Philanthropoids? No, what were they called?
Philanthropath.
A philanthropist. Folks, that's fantastic. That's perfect.
Well, you talk about Ford. Ford has this thing, as do many corporations, unfortunately, the Ford Foundation. And this veers us off into using all this money of, the scions taking their their wealth, like that, like from Henry Ford or from Andrew Carnegie or from whomever, and using them to literally destroy the engine of freedom, the free market capitalist system that made their ancestors wealthy and made America great initially in their with their inventions and with their corporations. And they're trying to use that money to destroy America or take control of it for their own nefarious communistic purposes.
Yeah,
And here we have it.
the Ford Foundation is one of the worst. So yeah, that's a very good point. I think one of the reasons why Buck is interested in Ford, one of the many reasons, is that they have an interesting relationship with the state of Tennessee. I don't know if it's as benign as it, well, not benign, but as back scratching as it used to be. But they didn't Ford. Announced plans to build some huge EV plant in Tennessee. How was
Oh,
that going?
it's really, it's a bubbling story that I'm trying to get some answers from elected officials and others. What is going to happen? What happened is back about 5, 6, 7 years ago, Ford, because obviously the government was going to mandate an all electric future, and Farley and Billy Ford were all in on it, and so they committed to build a massive all EV plant outside of Memphis, along with a huge battery plant, plus another battery plant in Kentucky. I think it was in affiliation with something called LG. But so the state of Tennessee kicked in $1 billion of taxpayer money
Wow.
towards this
Well.
plant and did all the grading and land moving and everything. And of course, this was very Republican Tennessee, I might add, with a Republican Governor Bill Lee.
Really?
And so Ford built the plant, and it's was going to start producing vehicles by now. Guess what? It's not. They keep postponing the announcement, the commencement of production date. It's now allegedly 2028. And remember, Ford is right now pretty much dealing with the fact that they are trying to soft sell the fact they're canceling their Ford Lightning electric pickup, which I like to call the Ford conflagration, but its technical name is Ford Lightning. And so they're now about to start building zero electric pickup trucks, even at their old plant. They have this huge mothball plant in West Tennessee. And so I'm really starting to agitate with local leaders. We need to claw back that money. That plant is never going to hire a person. It's never going to produce an electric vehicle. Hopefully they'll repurpose it for something. But on top of that, lessons need to be learned. And you know what? Political careers should be lost because of that. They bought into the EV hype. And the most sinister thing about all that is for all this money that red states threw at EV projects in Georgia, Tennessee, North Carolina, it was all on the premise that government was going to outlaw the freedom of people to buy ICE cars. Republican governors did that. It's so upsetting.
I remember
You're
seeing
Republican.
an article about how much money Ford lost on every EV it sold.
It's that.
And it was, maybe I'm misremembering this, Buck, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it was in excess of $100,000 on every EV it sold.
Something to that effect. But when Ford is rolling up $5 billion a year losses, yeah, it's just incomprehensible.
About $100,000 a vehicle. It's almost, I think a new Rolls Royce is like 76,000, a bare bones model. But God Almighty.
Yeah, it's amazing. And once again, our politicians and our elite have ignored some basic economic laws, and they cannot be violated. And they keep trying every single day, it seems. You read about some blue, well, as Buck pointed out, not just the blue cities, but both red and blue states are trying to violate basic economic laws. You can't produce a product if there's no market for it. You can build them, but they will not be purchased. And Ford, their E, what the Lightning, the 150 Lightning or the Lightning 150, whatever the hell they call it, nobody wants one. They're not gonna sell any of them. And as Buck has pointed out, they're losing tens of billions of dollars on this. And, you know, Ford as a major corporation in the United States is in trouble because of this kind of crap. And they're not the only ones.
No. And just in general, I'm really hopeful that there was some bizarre euphoria. I think we're going to look back at 2020 around that time as something like 1968 is looked back on. Just really a confluence of bizarre things between COVID and wokeness and the peak of the eco nonsense. And there was just this irrational sensation, even among Republican politicians, to start engaging in venture socialism and start investing taxpayer money in the whole reorder of the economy. And I'm thrilled it blew up. I just want there to be political repercussions.
I think there are. The repercussions are not going to extend into people losing their jobs, but they are frantically recalibrating their public statements about this kind of stuff. And that's
Correct.
the first step. It has
It
to be the
is.
first step.
It is. And again, that to circle back a little with Bill Gates, when prominent people like that are backpedaling, that indicates that society as a whole and the whole political class is probably going to start backpedaling too.
You know, I have friends who are car enthusiasts, and they have enough money that they can buy these amazing hybrid cars that are unbelievably fast and just incredible pieces of technology. But and the electric motors that they use to supplement the ICE the internal combustion engines work very, very well, but at a very at first of all, at a huge cost, and you're paying a lot of money for a marginal increase in performance, and that's fine. That's called the market. The market has identified a very small niche of potential customers, and it's satisfying that niche. But extrapolating that to millions and millions of cars built each year for the American market is just insane. I am unwilling to spend $5,000 or $10,000 extra for some marginal increase in performance, but with that comes a marginal decrease in utility. Because at the end of let's say 5 or 6 years, and I want to sell the car, I won't be able to because it's got a 5 or 6 year old battery in it and 5 or 6 year old electric motors that nobody knows how to fix. And it's heavier, and the tires wear out quicker, and there is the non-zero chance of it exploding into flame in my goddamn garage. So I'm just not going to buy one. You can buy one if you want. It's your call, but I'm not going to buy one.
I'll tell you this. I have a 25-year-old Buick LeSabre, and outside of being in a dinged in a fender bender and wrecking a few things, my dealer fixed the whole thing, and it's got a 3.8-liter engine. And it's a GM product, and he says, hold on to this car because it's going to run another 25 years. All right. That gets me to the age of 90 with old Bessie still motoring along.
Yeah.
So
No.
I am not letting this car go. I mean, hopefully someone will, when I'm gone, who knows when that'll be, one of my relatives will inherit a classic. God bless it.
Yeah. No, that's both what you said is such a what's going on, because I remember getting my driver's license back in 1979. I turned 16, and my first car was a used 60, like what was it, 12, 13-year-old 67 Buick with a 400 horsepower engine. And
Yep.
I wanted to be able to beat my buddies off the line when I was 16 years old. That mattered. And it was so much fun. And there's still a market for that. And apparently, if you want to beat your buddy off the line in a car, there's no better vehicle than a Tesla or an EV to do it, which is cool. But you know what? A couple decades later, what I want in a car is utility, and the ability to haul or tow anything I need. And the EVs, they. If you want to get off the line fast, that's probably your best vehicle, but that's very small market niche.
Yep. Listen, we can talk about this forever, but I would like to move on to a couple of other topics.
Yes.
I would like to get Buck's perspective on last week's election. I was actually quite unhappy with the results. But then, with a few days of perspective, I realized that expecting blue New Jersey to go red, it was probably high in the sky. And expecting very, very purple, bordering on blue, Virginia to go red, especially with an untested and lousy campaigner, I think was irrational. So, Buck, what do you think?
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't get too worked up about it in the first place. I know that in the world of political junkies, sometimes we're kind of like sports junkies or gambling junkies. There's a Tuesday night football game, and don't care, but I got to care about something. These are three blue states that voted for Kamala, that almost always vote blue. And guess what? They voted blue. And as political junkies, so what does that mean? To me, it means that blue states voted blue. It doesn't mean anything. What I'm getting a kick out of right now, as I read the various pundits, and some may know I'm not a huge fan of the legacy conservative media that seems to, well, I'll say National Review, David Harsanyi, those type of people, Wall Street Journal, that. George Will, that everything is, they frame it towards their agenda. It's the economy, stupid. It's the economy, stupid. And so they're trying to frame it. Yes, we need to go back to exporting all our jobs, get rid of the tariffs. And people are trying to frame that ele those elections where blue states voted blue as Trump needs to abandon his agenda. And it's just, I don't know. I hate those three elections, because barring the strange situation where a Chris Christie wins, where a Glenn Youngkin wins, they always vote blue, and we just don't need to worry about them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was hoping you were going to say something like that, because I was also concerned that my equanimity after a few days was simply wish casting. But I think you bring up a very, very good point.
Yeah.
So, what about you, Sefton? What do you think? Are you slitting your
And not to
wrists?
harp on it. I'm sorry, not to harp on a point, but there was some questions about some potential shenanigans in New Jersey, and if that sort of story is kind of look. And I know people say, oh, you keep moaning, pissing, and moaning about cheating, and we know that shit does happen. But still, there was some legitimate stories about shenanigans in New Jersey. Was it enough to that can it be proven? I don't know, but it was out there. It was in the media. But yes, blue states will vote blue, and unfortunately, New York City voted to frickin' literally stick its head in a gas chamber and turn on the gas. I mean, it's like, this is, and again, I keep asking, and I want to get maybe Buck's opinion on sort of the conflicting reports of younger generations rejecting, the Democrats. And yet here we have poll after poll saying that the younger people and others are embracing socialism now. And it's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. One thing that really concerns me is if the young folk are looking at corporate culture and saying, is that capitalism? And it's hard, because I know that young men are very, very conservative. And it's hard to state whole generational things. I mean, it's so funny that once upon a time, the hippies were supposed to be liberals, but now those are the conservative retiree boomers. So there's a wide swath of everything in each demographic. But it does bother me when, some of the stuff I've written about recently, where like Sherwin Williams, it's suspending its 401ks and giving, well, at the same time, it's giving a massive pay raise to its CEO and trying to using the cash to buy stock back. And it's corporate America setting an example right now to inspire the young to say, yay, capitalism is good. And I'm concerned about that. And then on top of that, we're right now, the whole H-1B outsourcing thing is a little bit like the whole China Inc. thing about 20 years ago. I knew some executives in companies back then who when things were blowing up and going bad with their Chinese operations, we're still, but you have to. Everyone, why? Because everyone is doing it. You have to outsource everything to China. And there's just this fervor in corporate America now about outsource every possible job. And any job you don't outsource, you need to replace
With AI.
with AI or an H-1B
Yeah. Yeah.
laborer or foreign laborer who's virtual chattel, who has lower wages and benefits. And if that is corporate culture, that's not impressing the young. I can't imagine.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think that there are counter examples that are heartening, let's put it that way. I know that JP Morgan came out a couple of weeks, maybe last week, with a big announcement about an initiative that they're going to spend about $10 billion of their own money on strategic industries in the United States,
I saw that
military. Yeah.
on. I really, I think I actually wrote about that and applauded it. That's.
Yes. And I think that it's that kind of stuff that makes me think, well, maybe not all of them are bad. But I wonder, are they serving their global masters? You talk about Sherwin Williams and, well, I mean, Ford Motor Company and GM, we just talked about them. I think they're serving their globalist masters more than they are serving their stock owners and their employees. But
For a couple of
boy.
decades, I think it's just been people are very comfortable just almost being proudly anti-American for
Yes.
as a global face as a way of marketing. I still remember back in, I think it was 2007, when Pepsi's CEO Indra Nooyi famously likened the continents of the world to the five fingers on a hand. And said, and America has to stop acting like the middle finger. I was shocked because I was still a pom-pom waving, I love corporations person at the time and thought, what the heck? And I had no idea that corporate that this executive suites of corporations have been so infested with an anti-Americanism and that they're promoting anti-Americanism to sell the product abroad. And maybe that's it's not a genuine anti-Americanism, it's an advertising campaign. But if this it, this is a good time for that to turn around. And again, as you said about JP Morgan Chase, and good on Jamie Dimon, maybe he will be a leader in getting CEOs to re-embrace patriotism and to realize that America First is good business, be a global corporation that is proudly American and does not crap on America.
All right, I'm going to grab that term America First, because it's a perfect lead into our next topic, which is Nazis and Tucker Carlson. Because I think that the leftists who are masquerading as conservatives, Tucker Carlson's an excellent example of one, they are conflating America First with America only. They want it to be America only, and that is impossible. We are an interconnected world. The United States has interests outside of its borders, obviously. I am not suggesting that we return to the neocon stupidity of being the world's policeman. That failed miserably. We can look at the last 24 years and see how badly it failed. But the United States absolutely needs strong and loyal allies across the world. And there is nothing wrong with being a strong ally of Israel. I obviously have emotional connections to Israel, but I am also a defender of Judeo-Christian philosophy, and Israel is right at the tip of the spear in defending that. They are fighting Islam. They are among the only people on earth who are fighting Islam and understand that we are in an existential battle. So America First means supporting Israel in protecting Judeo-Christian philosophy and Western culture.
Yeah, as an America First conservative, I agree completely. I have so many thoughts there. I'll try to get them concise. That what makes America so exceptional, it is the outpost of the shining outpost of Western civilization, in the globe right now. It's tragic how Western Europe is being overrun, being surrendering to Islam. Right now, what's going on in Israel and Gaza, or for starters, that is the fulcrum of Western civilization. It starts there in the Holy Land, where Judaism and Christianity both call home. Right now in Gaza and Israel, in my mind, it is like Spain in the 600s up to the 1400s, the Reconquista fighting the expansion. And so what's going on in Gaza now, that is Seville. It's stopping the advance in Tours. It's the Battle of Vienna. It's fighting the battle for Western civilization. And so I feel strongly about that. I will also say, I do understand that after all the neocon wars and after all the you must profess your obedience to Zelensky, to the war efforts, whatever, that there's a whole bunch of people saying, no, I'm America only. Do not tell me I must praise anyone. Do not tell me I must embrace anything. And there's a little part of me that kind of feels that, you know what? We've had the Republicans have been America last, Democrats have been America never. And those of us who are America first feel betrayed. I kind of feel that if there's an America only element that is generally America only, that's isolationist. It's not a disguised anti-Israel. And that's why frankly, I despise Tucker Carlson. He's an agent of the enemy right now, fighting to undermine what we're doing. Because once if you're not America only, if you start bashing Israel, no. But if there is a, sort of like a Oilfield Randall, Jesse Kelly, some of those guys who are just isolationists, I'm not with them there. But if that pulls the center of it, the gravity, whatever I'm trying to say, from America last, which is where the Uniparty is, to America first. But no, I'm strongly America first. And frankly, I see Tucker Carlson same way I see the guys at Legacy Conservative Inc. They're actually trying to undermine the MAGA agenda.
Interesting though. It actually never occurred to me that the America only well they're the isolationists rather than the rabid Jew haters. I think we both agree on that. The three of us agree on that. That it is going to pull us away from America never. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
Well, gentlemen.
Well, what else do we have? There's got to be something going on. Oh yeah. Well, come on.
What we got?
Yeah,
We
well,
had the disaster of whatever, the
we've got
elections.
disasters every day.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've just real quick, I've kind of been focusing on is my wife and I lived in Baton Rouge a couple of years ago, and we were unsuccessful while we were there in helping the functional part of Baton Rouge secede from the non-functioning part of Baton Rouge. But after we left, it did happen. And
Oh.
there's a new city called St. George in Louisiana. And what's significant about that to me isn't that, okay, in one county and or parish in Louisiana, there was a redrawing of political boundaries. But that is what needs to happen across the country, in cities, in states, and maybe even some borders. I'm not talking national divorce. I'm saying these old lines no longer work. Southern Illinois, it's tragic that it's tied to Chicago. Eastern Oregon, it's tragic that they're tied to Portland. And then even in individual counties, where I'm from in Austin, in Travis County, Texas, that the ranchers out west are subject to a George Soros district attorney in that county. And we need to redraw political lines, and I'm really hopeful that that what happened in Baton Rouge could be the Lexington and Concord to have that happen. That Atlanta, what's it called? That area that's
Oh yeah, they're trying to secede from Atlanta. Yeah, I don't remember.
yeah,
Damn.
was it Buckhorn or
Yeah,
something? Yeah,
yes. Yeah.
Buckhead trying to secede.
Buckhead.
Yeah. And so I would just really like to see that get going. And I'm really fascinated watching the whole Alberta thing play out. Canada is effectively a self-loathing country, and there's a strong Alberta independence movement. And I'm keep my eyes on it. I really want to see that
Well,
happen.
you've identified some of the rank hypocrisy among the left. In one sentence, they support a two-state solution in Israel, which is the destruction, which is essentially the destruction of the state of Israel. But on the but the next sentence, they very carefully avoid the idea that Eastern Oregon should be a separate state, or Alberta should be a separate country, or Buckhorn should be a separate city, or you know, or let's extrapolate that a little bit more.
Well, the northern counties, the rural counties of California, want to get the hell away from L.A., San Francisco, and San
what about,
Diego.
What about Basque separatism in Spain? And what about the Catalan nationalism? We should support
Absolutely.
That, too.
Oh, we should. In fact, I've joked about that, especially when Canada had the audacity to recognize the nation of Gaza, I think it was, or the nation of Palestine.
Palestine.
So, if I were president, I would so quickly recognize Alberta as a free country. I'd recognize Quebec. And all those other European countries that are recognizing the nation of Palestine. Okay, to your point. Okay, well, let's recognize the nation of Scotland.
I recognize the nation of upstate New Yorkia as
we need that one.
And get the hell away from the five, Albany and whatever, and some of the other cities, and New York City can go pickle themselves. But there you go.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It is absolutely insane. Anyway, I think we're coming up on too
long.
Heartbreak,
yes.
Yeah. So, folks, thank you very, very much for listening. Buck Throckmorton, thank you very much for bringing your vast EV environmental knowledge to us. I would like you back on because there are, you know, things are happening. It seems like every week there's more and more stuff going on that is simply destroying this economy killing burp in our country. And I want to hear more and more about it.
Indeed.
Yeah. So Sefton, take it away.
Yes, sir. First of all, Buck Throckmorton, please read him over at Ace of Spades, obviously. He is also at thepipeline.org. And our friend Michael Walsh, we wish you a speedy recovery and hope we get to speak to you soon, too, if you're listening to this podcast. Buck also writes over at The Blaze and a couple of other places, and he is an invaluable friend and resource on this front and many others. And to all of you, thank you for the love and support and hitting the tip jar and commenting and being there for us. And also, as we are recording this on Veterans Day, I just want to send a special greeting to all of the veterans out there who have served and have been in uniform, and those who are still serving this still wonderful country of America in uniform. And everybody, just keep the faith, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for listening, folks.